94.5 WELY, it's the end of the road radio. It is time for our weekly wilderness report, and we are kicking it off this week as a little introduction to the wilderness report, and we're joined by the University of Minnesota Director of the Center for Forest Ecology, Lee Frelick. Thank you for joining us today.
It's nice to be with you.
Well, we're really glad to have you here. You know, we have really just a short time for this conversation. There's so much that we can cover, so I'd like to get just a brief overview now, but if possible, as our wilderness report progresses over the course of the summer and into the fall, it'd be great to talk with you again and,
sure.
And get into some more detail. The main thing that we want to talk about right now is the Rainy River watershed and how deeply interconnected all of our waterways and our forests are here in this region.
Yeah, well, basically the Laurentian Divide is the top of the watershed, and that is just to the south of the boundary waters, and water falling in that watershed goes through the boundary waters just to the east of Ely, and it goes down the international border route and then through Rainy Lake and other lakes there near Voyageurs National Park and then on to Hudson's Bay. So all the water is interconnected on that side of the watershed, and it doesn't go just by whether it's in the wilderness or not. It's the watershed, which includes areas that are outside the boundary waters wilderness.
As you describe that, it really helps to clarify the idea that what happens in one area can have a really tremendous effect, whether it's aquatic invasive species or pollutants, that those things happening near the Laurentian Divide can have an effect all the way up into the borderlands, into the boundary waters.
Oh, definitely. And the whole biosphere, the living part of the ecosystem on the Canadian Shield, which is the bedrock of that area, this ancient rock, which is in a lot of places over 2 billion years old, but it's pretty close to the surface. And so the living biosphere is like a membrane that's stretched over that undulating bedrock. And so it's really very delicate, and anything you do in one place is going to affect all the other places. And, of course, the flow of the water is very important, but there are lots of interfaces between wetland and upland or well-drained forests, many miles of interfaces between water courses or wetlands and forests in every square mile, just an extraordinary density because it's such a complex web of life. And therefore, everything that affects the water affects everything else, even the upland forest, the wildlife habitat. Everything is affected in this highly intricate, interconnected web of life, which has water flowing through it and is stretched over this bedrock.
And of course, water is such a crucial element to the wilderness area up here, such a huge draw for people with these interconnected lakes and the portages between them. The sheer number of people that travel through this region by canoe, through the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness into Quetico Provincial Park and Voyageurs National Park. What's a way to help people sort of realize their impact as they travel and some things that you can recommend people to do when they're in this sort of ecosystem?
Well, be very careful. You know, as you walk, try not to dislodge all of the elements of the ecosystem, like rotting down logs and carpets of moss and so on, because these are all actually part of the aquatic system, because they soak in water and then when it rains and redistribute it later. So it's not just litter and things that people can see. It's whether people compact the soil and change the way the water flows, or whether they disrupt some of these structures like moss carpets and rotting logs that actually store water that can be used during times when it's not raining. They're all part of this interconnected system, and just try to disrupt it as little as possible. and enjoy the natural beauty of it. I mean, these rotting logs can have many, many different species of moss and little plants and tree seedlings on them, and some of those structures are actually thousands of years old because the seedlings will grow up on a log that fell thousands of years ago, and then they'll die when they get old and fall over in the same place, and then new trees grow up on it again. So there really are a lot of very ancient structures in what we call the microtopography on the land, and they're in the water with the kind of the hummocks that you get in sedge wetlands, or even the fallen logs that go into the water of lakes, which are important parts of the habitat for some stages of the life cycle of fish. And it's all interconnected. All of those little microtopographical structures are kind of all linked together into an entire ecosystem. And it's kind of provides a sense of wonder and comparison for other ecosystems that have been more disturbed by people when you return home and see how simplified the ecosystem is in places where humans dominate.
It seems like there perhaps isn't enough recognition really just how fragile the ecosystem is and how much of an impact people can have on it. We're seeing greatly increased traffic here in the Boundary Waters and Superior National Forest in general. And so as part of this segment here on WELY, we're in part trying to educate people on their impact to this. And we see it, I see it being in the woods here every day, how it changes from day to day, you know, going a couple of weeks without rain to see how quickly the forest can dry out. What have you seen over the years as part of the Center for Forest Ecology? What have you seen in terms of climate change impact, human impact on the forest here? What are some of the major changes that you've seen in the forest ecology here?
Well, I guess the big one is the kind of invasion of temperate species, like, say, red maple and bur oak and northern red oak and basswood. These are temperate zone tree species, and then you have the boreal species like white and black spruce and balsam fir and paper birch and jack pine there in the Boundary Waters, and it's right at the edge of those two biomes, which makes it a very interesting place. And as the climate is warmed, we're already seeing the seedlings of these temperate species spread into the boreal forest. So if you drive along Highway 169, for example, in September, you'll see a lot more red from all the red maples that are turning red than there was, say, 20 or 30 years ago, where it's just little patches here and there, and now it has spread a lot more. One of the odd things we've noticed is that when we have one of these big forest fires like Pagami Creek or the Ham Lake Fire that have occurred in the last 10 or 15 years, is that sometimes the areas right around campsites don't burn. So there's like a little green island there, and that's because so much of the wood has been taken off of the forest floor that would have carried the fire through.
Sure.
That you get these little green islands, and in one sense it's kind of a nice thing, but in another sense we know it's not natural. I mean, the fire under natural conditions would have burned through that area, and it's part of the rejuvenation and the recycling of the nutrients and so on that happens when there's a forest fire. It's even important for the chemistry of the lakes, because over thousands of years, the calcium and magnesium and other elements like that are released from the vegetation in forest fires, and they end up being washed into the lakes, and they end up maintaining the chemistry of the water over thousands of years so that it's suitable for fish. If it wasn't for that, otherwise the whole ecosystem would acidify and would be like the sphagnum bogs, which are very acidic and don't have any fish. They, instead of being localized to just a few areas here and there, they would spread over the whole landscape if it wasn't for these natural interactions between the fires and the landscape and the chemistry of the ecosystem.
That's such a fascinating balance, and to sort of bring it all home, talking about how it affects the chemistry of the water, which affects the fish that are in the waters, which is a big part of recreation here. The forest ecology affects the presence of white-tailed deer and moose and other game species. So it all has an impact, the human impact, the impact from fire, the impact from warming temperatures. All of these things come back to the fact that it's a recreation area and that people count on these things as part of their recreation, a part of their life here in the Northland.
Yeah, that's true. It's this incredibly complex web which has thousands of interactions, and if humans go in there and make some sort of a big change, it's going to tug on all of those interactions in all sorts of ways that are both expected and unexpected, and cause many, many different types of change in the ecosystem.
Well, it's really fascinating, and as I said at the beginning, we're really just scratching the surface here, talking about forest ecology and the watershed here in the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness, this Peary National Forest, and our entire region here. So I want to thank you once again for taking the time, and hopefully we can further this conversation a little bit more. I do want to just take this time right now just to mention to our listeners that if you are heading out into the wilderness, if you are just going for a hike, if you're camping, if you're canoeing, to please educate yourself on ways to prevent the spread of aquatic invasive species and to minimize your impact on the landscape as you travel through the Boundary Waters and our wilderness area here. Again, Lee Freilich, thank you so much for joining us, Director of the University of Minnesota Center for Forest Ecology. It's been a pleasure talking with you, sir.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's been fun.
Thank you so much. You're listening to the End of the Road Radio, WELY.